the inadequacy of care is a phenomenon which is somewhat older and in which remedies came much sooner. Now, the landmark date of the Ewing Plan, drawing my recollection, was about 48, 49, 50. The Kennedy efforts came in about 59 and 60. Now, there is some drama in the fact that Kennedy was deeply disappointed by the failure of the Senate to pass his bill. And he blamed something of this occurrence on me, as I controlled, I shouldn't say controlled, as there were about 7 Republican votes with me for a plan I had. It was called the Anderson-Javits Plan. And I refused to give him those votes, and hence he lost. The debate on the Kennedy bill, which you'll find in September of 1960, is very interesting and a very useful point of reference. The issue was so hot that Nixon adopted and supported the bill that I had with Senator Clinton Anderson of New Mexico, a Democrat, a conservative Democrat. Now, the difference between the two measures is a matter of historical interest. My bill, or our bill, Anderson, was based upon the existing machinery of insurance companies and trade union management agreements and state agencies. Many states had some form of medical care for indigents and the poor, etc. The Senator Kennedy's plan, speaking of Jack Kennedy, required the establishment of machinery comparable to the British health scheme. And I opposed it for that reason. Now, looking back at history, I wish I hadn't. Not because it was good. It really was not. And considering the demands which the public would have made immediately, because people don't realize how long it takes to get organized, it would have broken down and been a disaster. But in retrospect, I think that we would have accelerated, even with the breakdown, that the later development by 10 years. But Jack was stubborn, And I guess I was too. Anyhow, what happened was that the attention of the country and the Congress became focused on this program. And we began to fish around for what categories of patients could be helped. And we came first to the category of the aged for two reasons. One, our population, as you know, is aging. And second, it's the most sympathetic constituents. And so Medicare became a part of the activities of the Finance Committee with great support from the organized elderly, who were then becoming a factor. We're talking now about the mid-60s. And with congressional support from people like myself, though the Republicans were in the minority, there were maybe 16 senators who, on the Republican side, who were willing to lend their support. And on the Democratic side, from Lyndon Johnson and of the Democratic majority. But the Democratic majority was never great enough to carry a health bill. You always had to have an important element of Republican support. And I rallied that largely. And then the Medicare interest was succeeded very shortly thereafter by the Medicaid, because the states were unable to carry or unwilling to carry the medical tab for the poor and the welfare clients. And that was a great element of discrimination, because so much of the poverty sector is black and minority. And hence the logical sequel to Medicare was Medicaid. And that came along very shortly thereafter on a shared state federal basis, which, unlike Medicare, is not very satisfactory, because it means difference in medical availability in different states, to some extent, enough to make it much harder on the poor than it is on older people. And we have not yet, to this day, dealt with the unemployed. And one of the really crying needs is that that be done, because most health plans terminate for the worker with either unemployment or a strike. And when you have, as we had, 12 million unemployed, even the 7 we have today, that is a disaster. And so that subject still cries for attention. Now, lastly, a concept that I had, and I think I introduced a health bill as recently as 1980. I maintained a very high degree of interest in this field. As a historical note, for example, I served on the Committee on Labor and Human Resources for 24 years, and I became, at least for half of that time, its ranking member. And in view of the fact that I replaced Barry Goldwater, had made a big difference. Now, the historical point is that the three Kennedy brothers, Jack, Robert, and now Teddy, all served on that same committee. And in view of the fact that I did too, the subject of national health legislation was very high. In addition, a parallel track was set by the chairman of the committee, who was a Southerner from Alabama, but who had very deep convictions about medical research. And I think our country owes him a very deep debt of gratitude for building up the NIH to a billion-dollar plus agency. And it's one of the great institutions which developed through this period and has had enormous impact on the ability to cope with the big killers, heart disease, cancer, and stroke, and is now devoting, perhaps partially because of me, a breakthrough effort in neurological and neuromuscular diseases. And that's ongoing and very hopeful. Now, the state of the play at this time, and I'll deal with costs and inflation very shortly, is that we have a firm system for the poor and welfare clients, for the aged, those over 65, and to some extent for mothers and newborn infants for their first years. But we have no effective operation for the unemployed or striking workers. And we do have a great health care network. We've had, in terms of the agreements between management and labor, and all of these classes, when I say labor, I'm talking about the employed. All of these classes have come close to solving their major health problems, though in all cases, take the aged for example, it's estimated that Medicare only looks after about two-thirds of health care costs for the aging. There are still many areas of deficiency, i.e. prescription drugs and the expensiveness of that particular. We have made great progress, and we need to act very urgently on the uncovered groups. I might say in that respect, finally, that you still have a better chance to live if you've got some money than you have if you don't. And I don't want to leave you with any impression that we're through with that sector. Far from it. The most promising development in that regard, which will lead me to the cost question, is the health maintenance organization, of which there are now 290 in existence, which serve 13.5 million patients or prospective patients, and which operate in 43 states, including the District of Columbia and Guam. And there are no laws against them in any state, and they operate on a fee for service, are paid in advance, and have the great advantage of dealing with preventive medicine as well as curative medicine when you've had it. And that's the big, big wave of the future, to which at present plans, Medicaid, Medicare, employer, employee, are markedly deficient. They do not deal with preventive care, and that's the hallmark of the future. Now, the HMOs are attributable to Ted Kennedy and myself, and we got them off the ground about 10 years ago with a $50 million appropriation to stimulate organization to finance the early stages, and we went through a big siege of debate and so on about what's called, quote, open enrollment, which naturally means taking a lot of risky customers, and that subject has to this day still not been settled. But on the whole, the movement has been very successful and remains very promising. Now lastly, because I want to give you a chance to ask questions, the cost factor. The cost factor has been heavily attributable to two points which made the medical care, the sore thumb standout of inflation. The rate of inflation in medical costs throughout the latter part of the 70s until it began to abate, that is, inflation began, was twice the rate of inflation generally. And it was very heavily attributed to a lack of effective organization and to a medical monopoly, largely by the doctors and largely under the patronage of the American Medical Association. There's been a great improvement, but it's far from complete. Margaret Heckler says that inflation is down to 1.5 times normal rates in medical costs, down to around 6 to 7% from the previous 14 or 15. But that struggle is far from over. And I'm sure you all know the effort made with what's called the DRG, which is the payment of medical costs on a case-by-case basis rather than on a basis of billing for whatever the supplier thought was a proper billing figure. No doubt about the fact that the DRG and peer review of hospital stays and the fact that hospital costs simply escalated so greatly as to chase people out of hospitals, even if they had insurance, are having their effect. And there are more beds than we really need. And indeed, there are big controversies about closing down beds. There is also a very big movement for keeping them walking, that is, outpatient facilities and home care. To me, the last is the most promising. And if I were today in Allied Health, I would place a great emphasis on training and organization and an adjustment in terms of salaries or hourly compensation to deal with home care. And that care can be made very economical with lesser trained people operating under well-trained supervision, i.e. a registered nurse could perhaps supervise more than one household and yet give, under that supervision, effective care. And that nurse might earn more money than she earns today. even at the fancy hourly rates which prevailed. Now with that, doctors have to cooperate, and they haven't learned how yet. And these are very serious problems. Lastly, the medical care is highly technological, and the grip on the duplication of facilities is urgently required. In my state, New York, and in yours here, permission now has to be granted for the acquisition of important items of equipment. And there's no reason in the world why a CAT scan has to be available in the office of every Park Avenue doctor, or in one hospital which is right next to another, or a cobalt treatment piece of machinery, etc., etc. We have not yet gotten abreast of those problems, and they need urgent attention and need to be thought through. Finally, we've come a long way. We are not going to have a national health organism or institution, a British style, but we are going to have to make very considerable reforms and improvements in what we have in order to give a true equality without regard to economics for the patient to give a much better break in health care, especially to the poor and the homeless and the welfare clientele, to do much more than we dream of doing about preventive health care. And finally, to provide even greater research opportunities than we have today to the institutions for research, where I think history will show in the next century that in that respect we're still in the dark ages in terms of what ails us and what to do about it. And lastly, we have an enormous task in dealing with new drugs and generic versus prescription, over-the-counter versus both, and in the private enterprise activities of the drug and pharmaceutical and other suppliers of healthcare, and in the applicability of the experience and training of the healthcare professions to constantly new developments. in that regard. Vis-a-vis hospitals, clinics, and the home. Any questions? Yes.
I find the realities of Medicaid for the patient very frightening. I don't understand how today, with all the work of economists and marketing experts, that we can set fees at a price that is probably less than half what the doctor would get from a private patient, and expect these patients not to be turned away when they go for private care, which in turn may give the physician incentive to do tests that are unnecessary or cause the patient to go to an emergency room for treatment at inflated costs. It seems an obvious thing, and I find it difficult to understand why it's not being dealt with on that level, why the fees are not raised to at least the market price for medical care.
Well, I think you have to move both ways. I think you have to first bring the fees down, and also bring the reimbursement up. I think that life, unfortunately, has trade-offs. I don't think we can capitulate to the medical profession. Now, it may be that we ought to go in for guarantees of minimal earning, and thereby to persuade the medical profession that they're taking or asking too much. And in addition, I think that peer review of what they do is extremely important. I'll give you an example in which I was deeply engaged.